Hello Bulls fans and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for joining me and hope you're all doing well out there in Bulls Nation. The All-Star Game is done, basketball is thankfully back, and with the Bulls playing two games since the return, we're moving closer towards the end of the season, which is fantastic news if you're like me. And maybe just like the Bulls' tanking efforts, you're losing a bit of steam and momentum here towards the back end of the season. We're kind of wishing the season would be over, and we're getting closer to that. But in terms of the tank itself, all hope hasn't been lost just yet. Since the return, the Bulls have clocked up two straight losses, the first of those losses being to the Philadelphia 76ers, losing by 1 point in hilariously epic fashion, leading by 5 points with about 30 seconds to go then, and still finding a way to come up with the loss, which is clutch tanking performance there from the Chicago Bulls. But the other loss there, of course, being on Saturday night as well, outclassed by the Minnesota Timberwolves by 18 points, 1 day after former Bull Jimmy Butler went down with an unfortunate knee injury. So what I plan on talking about today on the podcast is reviewing the Minnesota Timberwolves game itself. Probably won't talk too much Sixers, but I also wanted to talk just Wolves in general, because there obviously is a lot of connections there between the Chicago Bulls and the Minnesota Timberwolves. And given Jimmy Butler going down with that significant knee injury, I thought it would be a good opportunity to maybe get a Wolves fan perspective on not only Jimmy Butler's injury, but just in general, his impact, what he's meant for the Minnesota Timberwolves this season, how he's sort of changed the culture there in Minnesota and the off-court effects that Jimmy Butler has had. And we'll also hit on probably Tibbs and I guess the blame that is sort of going around at the moment on this Butler injury potentially being linked to, I guess, Thibodeau's use of Butler and the heavy minutes that he does apply to his players. So I've got a bit of a rant that I want to get off my chest on that one, as well as discussing this Wolves game. So in order to go through this game today, as well as all that other topics, I've got Patrick Fenlon, co-host of the Land of 10,000 Takes podcast, joining me today. Patrick, thanks for coming on, mate.
Yep, good to be here.
We just got done watching the Bulls and the Wolves, who I just didn't realize that until then. That kind of rhymes, but we got done watching them play their second game of this season. The Wolves winning in the end comfortably by 18 points, 122-104. But in a lot of ways, it wasn't necessarily the game that we were concerned about, at least for me. I'm probably sure you feel the same as well, given what happened yesterday to Jimmy Butler. But the Wolves did get a good win here post the Jimmy Butler injury. So just generally, how are you feeling after the unfortunate news that came through after Jimmy Butler hurt his knee yesterday against the Houston Rockets?
Better, but I still might have issues. I need to talk out with a therapist after thinking that he might have a torn ACL. That terrified me.
Well, hopefully this podcast can help you out a little bit in that front.
It was bad when he looked at the camera and said, it's torn.
Yeah, yeah.
It's there, and he meant his meniscus. If you want my two senses, I think he knew exactly what was going on with his meniscus. He's not stupid. He knows his body. He felt it. Like, that's what was happening. And, yeah, I thought it was something very different than that. And, yeah, but, yeah, I was very nervous yesterday. Until David Aldridge tweeted out that Jimmy Butler's camp is very optimistic it's not an ACL tear. And then that was an hallelujah moment because the Timberwolves have the best training staff in the NBA, thank fucking God.
It would have been tough at the time to see him go down, but it probably has been a good 24-hour period, I guess, in terms of the news that came out. Butler's camp, as you mentioned, were pretty positive. The reports were sort of starting to surface that it probably wasn't going to be an ACL, and that was confirmed as much today with the confirmation that he had torn his meniscus, which still isn't great, but it's obviously not the worst case scenario, which is good. And the Wolves probably bounced back as well as you could have hoped, I guess, given the news that sort of happened. They were on a back-to-back, unfortunately, as well. So not a good part of the schedule there to sort of have this go down, even if they were facing the lowly Bulls. But coming back 24 hours later, getting news about Butler, and then coming out and beating the Bulls and winning pretty well there, 122-104. Given where you were probably 24, 48 hours beforehand, it's probably the best case scenario that you sort of could have hoped for with Butler, but as well as the Wolves, how they played afterwards.
I mean, yeah, it was the best case. I mean, I was hoping like somehow let this be a grade one MCL where he's back in a week, please.
Yeah.
God. Or, well, what I jokingly said on Twitter was like, what if Jimmy Butler is screwing with everyone? It's like a Paul Pierce wheelchair situation. And he's just getting wheeled off to the locker room just to come back against the Bulls in a triumphant fashion the next day. Like, oh, no, my knee's fine.
He would totally do that, too.
I know he might actually do that. That's the thing. He's such a goofy guy. And I, oh, my God, I adore him. He is the best. He's so awesome.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, no, his it's really hard to describe his personality. It's not a normal coolness of an NBA. It's a genuine weirdness. And I could go off on tangents about this, but it's brought out about, like, whenever he's interviewed, you see guys interact with him in the background as if, you know, usually you see guys like Karl Anthony Towns who are very guarded with the media. All of a sudden they'll just start riffing with him just in the background because Jimmy Butler's talking. It's hilarious. He's the best. But yeah, I was very nervous about it yesterday, and it would have been literally a season and a half injury long. And turns out, like, it'll kind of be over if you want to get into the details of what the operation will probably be. But yeah.
Yeah, we'll come back and we'll talk the Butler injury a little bit later on. But let's focus on the game maybe for 10 minutes here, because I guess the first half was entertaining, but maybe not necessarily the second half, or at least the last quarter if you're a Bulls fan. For the Wolves, probably a little different story. But the game itself, this one was an interesting one as well, for me at least, for the first half, because we saw Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine return to Minnesota for the first time. How did you feel about these guys sort of coming back? And look, me being online, knowing how Wolves fans felt particularly about Zach LaVine.
Oh, I adore Zach LaVine. He is...
And a lot of Wolves fans sort of share that sentiment as well. So how did you sort of feel seeing those guys back?
You know how Blazers fans feel about Damian Lillard and just sort of his confidence when he's just going to step back and take a three? That's how I feel about Zach LaVine. Like, he'll take a game into his own hands, has no fear whatsoever. And he's good in that situation. He's a train wreck in certain other aspects of his game, and I hope all of that gets better because he's awesome to watch at basketball. But, you know, like, anything off ball, he's just not that good at. Man, but my God, he is he's kind of the anti-Wiggins in terms of personality. He's just this super confident dude that will just not scared of a big moment and will show up 100% every game. Not in a Jimmy Butler way, but sort of in a kind of hard to describe even. Like, it's just pure swagger, and I love it. Just tons of fond memories of him. He was Flip Saunders' like prized pick like that year. I know Flip Saunders promised he'd draft him before he drafted him, and he picked him higher than a lot of people thought he would go, and a lot of people were very wary about him, especially Minnesota. And it turned out really well. We were really attached to him. It really sucked to see him go. Like, the trade was a no-brainer at the time, but holy crap, it sucked.
I could imagine so. And we're sort of seeing his personality come out here in Chicago. Obviously, it's a little bit different now that he gets to be, I guess, the face of the franchise, which maybe wasn't necessarily the case in Minnesota. But he, like you say, he does have that personality aspect. It's not quite like Jimmy Butler, but you can sort of see that he has, I guess the personal qualities to be a star. I'm not sure if his game will necessarily reflect that, but if his game can catch up to his profile, I guess he can definitely be that. But I thought he was really good today in this Wolves game.
It always helps if you give out puppies during games. That really does.
That's
help.
True. That is very true. That definitely helps you in that front. But look, for me watching him today, I thought, at least in the first half, at least when it was competitive, that was probably
his
best
Wiggins
game.
Him and Wiggins were going at it. It was awesome. Those two were like best friends here. And
okay.
Like inseparable best friends.
Wow. Okay.
Went out everywhere, did everything together.
Yeah.
The guy that hung out with him a lot, weirdly, do you remember Lorenzo Brown?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that was the other guy that hung out with him when he was still on the team that, like, I remember the rookie year, but, and those two, those three always hung out together a lot, but like those two, but specifically Wiggins and LaVine were just really, they're just really tight. They were just going at it like, you know, you see, I guess former teammates always go at it, whether it's on the Olympics or I guess within the NBA. And they just really went at each other because they wanted to prove something. And it was really cool to watch. There was no bad blood. It was just good sportsmanship. I mean, it's why we watch sports.
Yeah, definitely. And look, Zach LaVine, I thought, had his best, almost complete half of basketball as a Chicago Bull. I think he had 15 points, 5 assists, and 4 rebounds in the first half.
Yeah, he was passing the shit out of that thing.
Yeah,
like, I was really impressed by that.
Oh, for sure. As a facilitator, that's been probably my biggest question of him since he's come over to Chicago. And he looked incredible, particularly in pick and roll. And I want to ask you something shortly about Zach LaVine as a facilitator. But coming back to Wiggins, he was also great as well. And I do wonder if it almost takes something emotional like that to get the best of Andrew Wiggins out of this game. But the first game after the injury, Wiggins was pretty awesome, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at Andrew Wiggins when it comes to stuff like, every time he plays against the Cleveland Cavaliers or against the Toronto Raptors, you know, he shows up and he's good on both ends and he's just super efficient. And I mean, he's more athletic than Zach LaVine, which is insane to think about.
Yeah.
He's just kind of an enigma. It's very frustrating. Hopefully we get to see playoff Wiggins this year. That would be very cool to see because he'll show up for 4 games in a row. At least
you would hope so, but he 23 points today, 10 of 18 from the field. Like you said, very efficient game. Didn't do a ton in terms of the rebounding and the assist department, but I mean, he did look, just from a body language perspective, he looked very outward and more confident, and it probably was because he was going against LaVine. But like you said, it was fun to watch those two guys in the first half. And what I noticed about Zach LaVine in that first half as a facilitator was how comfortable he looked sort of operating in the pick and roll and finding that role man. And in this case, it was Cristiano Felicio.
Yeah, he never did that in Minnesota, and I was really impressed with him tonight. That's actually a unique step to see.
So that's what I wanted to ask you about his playmaking in Minnesota just generally, but I guess with that, you know, running in pick and roll and using that role man, did he have a connection with guys like Karl Towns and Gorgui Dieng at all? And because he looked really comfortable tonight, sort of making that pocket pass into that rolling big and getting them some easy looks.
He had some chemistry with Karl Towns. No one has great chemistry with Gorgui Dieng because he has just like big logs, like big pieces of lumber for hands. I call him Butter Jengers. I'm like, seriously, he has terrible hands and it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
But the other aspect was, as much, you know, I have a Ricky Rubio avatar, and the other, like, when you have a guy that's that good as a passer, there's this tendency sort of to let him be the maestro for the whole offense.
Yeah.
And so whether or not he was capable of it, well, he, like, in his first year, he certainly was not capable of it. Last year, he probably was not until maybe the very end of the year. But he would never have gotten an opportunity to really display it as long as he's playing alongside of, you know, Rubio, who I still think is probably one of the three best passers in the NBA. I mean, which it's not really, that's not a hot take. He's absolutely outstanding, especially with big men, because he was so good at feeding them entry passes sort of at like a level that was just kind of impossible to intercept if you're guarding him, which yeah, I could digress into how Jeff Teague sucks at that, but
I've got a Jeff Teague question lined up for you because I know how you feel about him. But
no, he was great tonight. That's the thing. He's been great the last few nights, and I'm like,
well, that's what I wanted to talk about with Jeff Teague, because I mean, he was really good in absence of Butler, 25.7 rebounds, 7
he was
assists,
super impressive, and he was everything I wanted him to be.
And no Bulls point guard, even Chris Dunn really couldn't stay in front of him.
No, and Chris Dunn's a great defender.
Yeah.
That's the thing I always said about him. I had here's a question I have for you. How's Chris Dunn at the rim? And I haven't watched enough of the Bulls this year. That was the big thing I always had with him, is that he really struggled with NBA rim protection last year. Like, guys would just Like, and I mean, D-League caliber guys would just come out and just destroy him.
Yeah.
Is he really adjusted in that? Because he seems a lot more confident driving this year.
He's definitely more confident. Certainly more confident driving the ball, putting the ball on the floor. And I guess that, given the fact that there was no LaVine, and I guess he probably was more established than Lauri Markkanen in terms of being that perimeter threat, at least from a coaching perspective, Fred Hoiberg was making Chris Dunn his closer, so to speak. So he had that confidence midway through the season, or maybe through December, January, where he was very confident in putting the ball on the floor and trying to get to the rim. Certainly wasn't efficient, but definitely was more so than last season. But I mean, we saw today he blew a wide open dunk today, so it's still a work in progress. And
yeah, he's a bundle of athleticism, and you just like, and then all of a sudden I'll just be like, so wait, why didn't the ball go in the hoop there, Chris? Like, what was that?
Exactly. And look, I don't like the fact that they're developing him as a mid-range shooter, but if I'm being honest, that's probably where I feel most confident about him, or, you know, in terms of a shot profile, that's where I'm most confident in him taking a shot. When he's driving to the hoop, it could be anything. It could be a wild miss. It could be a dunk. It could be a blown layup. But I think his mid-range shot has been better, and it's probably the most confident I am in him in terms of his offense. But to answer your question, I think he's finishing at the rim definitely needs a lot of work, particularly if he's going to maintain being that driving sort of point guard. So
here's the thing, like, what I always said last year is, like, you know, I question whether or not he was a point guard last year, because he has the size to be a two guard. He legitimately does. What I wanted to see more of him, and I saw tonight, was he was hitting some corner threes, which I really liked. I don't think Zach LaVine's a point guard either, but, like, hopefully Chris Dunn develops as a facilitator, because he, not so much a facilitator, just stops doing stupid turnover stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's really frustrating.
Well, I mean, it's ironic, because he has been really, or he's been much better in terms of his decision-making this season. He probably had a typical Chris Dunn game in terms of the bad version of Chris Dunn tonight against the Wolves with the, I think it was the 10 points there on the 12 shots and four turnovers, five fouls, not good shooting, yeah, not good playmaking, only two assists. So he had, like, I guess the early version of Chris Dunn of that we saw in Chicago. But he, you know, again, December and January really came along in terms of the playmaker.
He was very, very good there. And I think, you know, I guess I look at that as sort of, you know, you develop in peaks and valleys rather, you know, mostly. And, you know, he's probably just slumping after that. He'll be he'll probably have a higher peak after this. I'm sure he will. It's just very interesting to see what he'll end up being. You know, I still, as critical as I was of him last year, I was like, you know, this guy's still one of the best defenders on the team, and he's a rookie. That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely insane how good a defender he was. If this guy can hit some corner threes, he's got some, like, small man Bruce Bowen potential in him. Like, he's that good. Like, he's really that good. I liked him a lot.
We've just gone through a period here where he was obviously out after he sort of head planted into the floor there, but a few weeks back. And it was noticeable how much of an impact he has on this team. And I guess that speaks more to the Bulls as backups than maybe it does Chris Dunn. But when he was out, this team could not do anything in terms of creation at all when they had Jerry and Grant playing point guard. Probably would have been the same with Cameron Payne. But, I mean, his impact was noticeable. So he doesn't necessarily have to be that big-time scorer for him to be an impactful player. If he can just, like you said, develop a corner three, maybe a couple of other types of shots. But he was pretty bad in this game against the Wolves. He's returned to Minnesota, which was unfortunate for him. He didn't have quite the performance that LaVine did. But I've talked my point guard. Let's talk your point guard. How did you feel about Jeff Teague tonight?
No, he was great tonight. And I've been way more critical of him than I should have been this entire year. He does little things that piss me off, and I don't like watching him play basketball. And it's really hard to adjust.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Like, he's not a good entry passer, which is insane to me that, like, an NBA point guard is a bad entry passer, but he's, like, exceptionally bad at it. There's one to two turnovers a night on an entry pass. It's just, like, how do you do that? And it's not because it, like, he's passing it to Jang. It's because, like, it's like Towns has possession and you just decided to pass it to the wrong hand. What the hell were you doing?
Yeah.
He also just has, like, inexplicable moments where it's just like, yeah, it's just a lot of – he's just a very frustrating player to watch. Also, when he's aggressive, he's really freaking good.
Yeah, which he was tonight.
Really, really good. He's a great shooter. He can get to the rim is a weird expression because he doesn't really get to the rim as much as he puts up a floater.
Yeah.
For no reason at all times. But he's really good at it. And it's like, I guess that's great. Cool. The biggest problem with him was that, like, the team was the best team in basketball when Jeff Teague was out and Tyus Jones was playing in his way instead of him, who I think just does a lot of things that makes the team better. Though with Jimmy Butler out, that's probably not the case anymore.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for Jeff Teague slightly, just watching from afar as well. And the reason why I say that is, obviously, you guys last season had Ricky Rubio, who was definitely a fan favorite. And now you've got also Tyus Jones off the bench, who, like you said, was part of a really good unit there, a five-man unit that
he's
made the
from loss here, too, and it just sucks for Teague. Like,
it you does. Can't...
And like, and here's the like thing is the metrics even back up that the unit was like better with Tyus. I mean,
yeah,
like
yeah.
A lot better. It just sucks. Yeah, I think that was largely a function of just fit, and Tyus made up for a lot of Jimmy Butler's issues, where he'll bring the ball up really slowly late in games.
Yeah,
where Tyus will often just cut around Jimmy Butler, grab the ball, and take the ball up court in pace so they have more time in the shot clock to get stuff done. It's really a lot of little things like that that he'll do. He, like, never turns the ball over. He's amazing in the pick and roll. He's outstanding in the pick and roll. Jimmy absolutely loves the guy. So, yeah, it was a cool dynamic. But, yeah, as long as Jimmy Butler's out, I think Jeff Teague is going to need to be in that scoring role no matter what, mm-hmm. which is what it is. So I'm happy for him that he's being aggressive and he's more comfortable with what he's doing. In terms of a long-term fit, if someone – I don't think it's going to work out very well, but that's fine. That's fine. Like, the whole goal this year was to get to the playoffs and get young guys playoff experience. That was the whole goal.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
So talk to me about one of these young guys. I'm talking about Karl Towns, and for me, looking at this game and just looking at the stats and these sorts of things and watching the game, it's unfolding. How does he only get 7 shots in the first half without Jimmy Butler playing in a game? How does that happen?
Well, he took a bunch of threes. Like there were, I believe he was 0-for-5 from 3 in this game. Yeah, I would like him to get more looks on the block, too. Well, with Jimmy Butler out especially, I would like him to get more looks on the block. With Jimmy Butler in, him shooting lots of threes and being a secondary option is actually just fine with me. The team with the Wolves have the third best offense in the NBA, which is bizarre to say because they play so ugly. No, seriously, it baffles a lot of people when I tell them that. But yeah, they're really good. Yeah. He was in foul trouble at a certain point. But yeah, he should get more shots. He's one of the, I think he's so efficient that that Tibbs will often, try to get guys into a groove and just expect Towns to just be efficient by default, which is a weird thing to do, but it's also bizarre. Like, because he'll need to get to win games. He's going to need either Wiggins or Jimmy Butler to get into a groove of scoring and to be confident in that, which is fine, but it's not the greatest fit with Karl Towns, who should be putting up Anthony Davis numbers every night.
Yeah.
That said, they're having way better success than Anthony Davis was having even with Boogie Cousins on the team. So I don't know how to judge this. I really don't. It's very strange.
It is, but I mean, he finished the game with 22 points and 13 rebounds, so he had much better second half. He definitely sort of was much better there in the third and fourth quarter, and he looked more dominant there. But look, from one big man to another, I'm not referring to us here, but from Carl Towns to Lauri Markkanen is who I'm referring to. I'd be interested to get your thoughts on Lauri Markkanen from an outsider's perspective. He was ineffective in this game. He wasn't good at all.
No, I love the kid. And I had the first inkling I was wrong during FIBA play when he was playing for Finland this summer.
Yeah.
Usually he's the kind of the archetype of players that I really fetishize, like, which is very strange, like, because I want stretch fours on this Wolves team always and often, but just in general I think that those guys are unfairly just get underutilized within the entire league. Also, it's sort of a confirmation bias because of how right I was about Kristaps Porzingis, and like being I'm just like, this kid is a fucking killer. Are you kidding me? He's playing NBA sets in, you know, the second best league in the entire world. What are you talking? Anyways, I digress. But like, I didn't see any of that with Markkanen because he went through the college route. And I'm just like, none of this is really impressive to me. Like what he's doing. And then suddenly he plays for Finland. I'm like, oh no, he's actually really freaking good at this. And the Wolves would have drafted him if the Jimmy Butler trade didn't get off. And I used to think like, oh, they're just signaling that because they wanted to sound good. I'm like, no, that's actually what they wanted to do, actually, because that's the smart thing to do. Because he's really good. He's really, really good. I don't know if he's all-star good, but he's really freaking good.
Yeah, look, I mean, amongst Bulls fans, we definitely think, obviously, he's all-star bound. Obviously, we're
no, that's fine.
Somewhat
you should,
biased about like, that.
I forget who it was. He's an analytics blogger. He's just, and he just looks at like, listen, I love prospects so much, but once they're rookies, I hate them. And that's kind of how I look at him right now. because like, you're a rookie. You're not good yet. Show me something. But I think he could be that good. There's nothing standing in the way of him being that good.
I agree. And it's always interesting to get an outsider's perspective on Markkanen. But look, let's... Oh, the only other question I wanted to sort of ask you about the game itself was Thibodeau's rotation. And obviously, it's a point of contention, not just for Wolves fans. It's something us Bulls fans have sort of had to deal with in the past there as well. But he only went to an 8-man rotation, which I guess is somewhat justifiable given that you had Jimmy Butler out. But he went to an 8-man rotation until the very last minute where he sort of brought in the bench warmers there. He had to wait until the last minute despite being up 20. But does he have really any other options, though? I guess is my point.
MGH, is it Marcus Georges Hunt? I think that's his first name. Yeah, Georges Hunt is a very good player, and I generally prefer him playing in front of Jamal Crawford. He's a good defender. He's a good defender, and unlike Jamal Crawford, he's a good defender. he can hit an open three. He just isn't prone to the massive swings that Jamal Crawford is on a bench unit, which is not like, I just want my bench unit to be stable and like seed like 4 points as opposed to being like generally seeding 8 points, but sometimes gaining 4 points. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And I mean, we saw it today though, Jamal Crawford, we got the good Jamal Crawford.
My new theory about Jamal Crawford is that he only plays well when I bitch about him on Twitter. That's my new theory. Because I was just like, why is he in? Oh, now he just hit 6 threes. That's great. Cool.
Well, I mean, he demolished the Bulls in the fourth quarter there. I think he had 12 points in the fourth. So
and that wasn't even a tanking thing. That was before that. He was just hitting everything.
Yeah.
He's a great player, and I really adore him. Like, I really like him as a person and as a... He's a basketball nerd like we are, apparently. Like, him and J.J. Redick are apparently were going... Like, when they were with the Clippers, would be, like, looking up basketball reference stats together on the team bus. Like, they're like us. He's like us, and I really like him, and I want him to be good. He's also 900 years old. He's like the guard version of Z-Bo, where he'll always be able to get his shot off. But like at a certain point, you're like, well, what's that worth at this point? So that's kind of how I feel about him. You know, I wish he was with the Wolves when Zach LaVine was here. I will say that.
Okay.
Because I know those two are really close. Both of them grew up in Seattle together. I think it's the Seattle Pro-Am is what I think it is, where Jamal Crawford will just basically MC the dunk contest. I have a lot of warm feelings towards Jamal Crawford. But yeah, like, he's very frustrating at this stage. Also, whenever I say anything about it, he's amazing. So I'll shut. No, I won't shut up. No, that's the I won't shut up. That's what I'll do. Yeah,
exactly. Keep telling him he's bad and he'll be good. Yeah, but he was very good.
Jamal, show me I'm wrong.
But he was very good today, and he killed the Bulls. Look, that's all I wanted to talk about this game itself, because as I mentioned before, it wasn't a great one after the second half. And given that the Bulls are tanking, there's probably not a lot of Bulls fans who are interested in actual game analysis anyway. They just probably want to get through with the season. But what I wanted to talk to you about now is more, I guess, the Wolves itself. I always like to get, I guess, the perspective of other teams on this podcast whenever I can. And given that there's so many, I guess, connections between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Chicago Bulls, and in this case, Jimmy Butler, I wanted to talk his injury just generally. We sort of touched on it, but I want to talk on it or focus on it a little bit more. But I guess my first question to you would be, what are you hoping he does here in terms of fixing up that knee, in terms of, I guess, rehabilitating himself? Would you prepare, or would you be prepared to see him go for the snipping option and take a little bit out of the meniscus there and maybe make it a 4 to 6 week injury? Or are you fully on board?
That's what he's doing, supposedly.
Like, yeah.
He's getting a second opinion, but yeah.
Well, how do you feel about that? Like, do you think the repairing of the meniscus is a better option? That would be a 3 to 6 month injury, so that would probably cost him his season. But I mean,
and the playoffs.
And the playoffs, definitely. But yeah, from a Wolves fan's perspective, knowing what you wanted to achieve this season, but also looking ahead, how do you feel about what he may or may not do here?
I don't know enough about the specifics of what needs to get removed with his meniscus. I don't know. It would really suck to see him at age 33 look like Dwayne Wade at age 33, where he's just in constant pain. That said, Dwayne Wade, how old is Dwayne Wade now?
Dwayne Wade will be about 36, I think.
Yeah, Dwayne Wade is still pretty damn good at age 33. So I don't know if it cuts his career short, but it would suck to see him in that much pain. It's very weird how that injury works, where performance-wise, I think it's overstated how much it cuts into it unless you're a marginal NBA player. Like, I remember Chase Budinger had his meniscus removed, and he was just like, oh, wow, now you just can't play in the NBA now. That's cool. But Jimmy Butler, who's an all-star, you know, I think he'll go down to 5% in ability maybe going forward, but he'll come back fast. The thing about him is, like, he's such a grinder. I don't think he's going to complain about much. It'll be very strange. I guess I would have been okay with him doing either. Because, again, the goal of the season is to get the young core minutes in the playoffs. That's the goal. Now, if he's worried about that being in jeopardy and he wants to get like two more wins in here, like to shimmy those in at the very back end of the back 2 weeks, week and a half, he's back for the season. Okay. The Wolves need probably 7 more wins to make the playoffs if the percentages all stay the same, which they won't, but that's what they'll need to do. I don't have strong feelings one way or another. I know Jimmy Butler is going to probably just be Jimmy Butler and get back as fast as possible. And you take that when you trade for him, that he's going to do that. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense, and it sounds very familiar. I mean, that's just Jimmy Butler's personality. And when we talk about minutes and Jimmy Butler playing all these minutes, and we'll come back in a little bit later on and talk about Thibodeau and his rotations and these sorts of things again. But I think you have to be prepared for Jimmy Butler just basically telling you, I'm staying on the court, I'm playing. That's just in his personality.
No, he doesn't want to come out. Like, if the game's close, he wants the ball in his hands. And there's a lot of times where that's actually problematic, when they would benefit from more like ball movement in certain rotations, which is very strange to say. But yeah, it's very weird. Like, you know, he'll try to go ISO at certain points because he wants to win that bad. You take the good and the bad with the dude, but he's not just a top 10 player. He's arguably like a top 5 player in the NBA. He's that freaking good.
I mean, this season he's an MVP candidate. So
yeah, no, he absolutely is. I said this. I'm like, so out of all the seasons of any Timberwolf has ever had, and that includes Kevin Love's insane season, his last year here, where he put up numbers that no one's seen since, like, basically, like, Kareem. Like, now screw that. He's still the best Timberwolf in terms of a single season performance since Kevin Garnett. He really is. He's that good.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I think, at least amongst Bulls fans, some Bulls fans, they probably haven't appreciated that Butler has continued to improve. We've obviously used to him continuously improve, but he's got even better since he's gotten to Minnesota, which is just crazy to think about.
He was insanely better. I had no idea he'd be that much better. I was in college watching it. I went to Marquette when he was there, and I watched him get drafted. I'm like, yeah, this guy might be a marginal rotation player someday. Lazar Hayward was better than him in college. Now he's like a top 5 to 7 player in the NBA. So, yeah, that's how that works. Just don't count this guy out ever. Under any circumstance, this guy works harder than anyone ever. It's insane. I've never seen anything like it.
No, I fully agree with you, and he wouldn't be the player he is now without that type of a work ethic. But what I wanted to ask you now, again, is something that I guess exists amongst Bulls Twitter and the Bulls fan base, I guess. It's a common narrative that the fan base has, and that this was always going to happen, that he was going to get injured, that Tibbs was going to break Jimmy at some point, and the Wolves were going to regret this huge trade that landed them Jimmy Butler. Personally, I think that's kind of ridiculous and arrogant for Bulls fans to actually say that. But from a Wolves fan's perspective, I'm interested to hear from you. Do you have any second guessing of the trade at all? Do you have any regrets about it? Is this all good, even with the incident and the injury? Are you still, I guess, fine with the trade itself, given obviously what we've seen with Jimmy Butler going down with a knee injury and seeing what we've seen from LaVine, Markkanen, and Dunn?
Let's talk short term.
Yeah.
Short term, even with rookie Markkanen, Zach LaVine with a bad knee, and Chris Dunn on this team, which I don't know if he flourishes under Tibbs, because Tibbs needs guys that prove to be capable of producing, which isn't fair, but that's what he needs. This team is basically fighting for an 8 seed still. If they don't trade for Jimmy Butler, that's the short term. The midterm would be basically the same thing, where you have, you know, you're extending obviously a max contract. Well, you're going to have issues with, you're extending a max contract to Townsend Butler, to Townsend Wiggins, and then LaVine would be this question point, and I don't know if they just match with something going forward from this season. I don't see LaVine ever having a season as good as this one's having that Jimmy Butler has. I just don't. I'd love him to prove me wrong. That'd be so awesome if he did. That'd be awesome. But I just don't see it. You could argue fit, I guess, that him and Wiggins have some problems because they're both kind of high use. They're both best in high usage situations, but that's kind of it. But minutes, like, Jimmy Butler is playing about the same number of minutes as he played under Fred Hoiberg. He just didn't happen to get hurt. The big stat that people put out there are these lineup stats. And those are jarring because Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins are freakishly healthy. Like, unbelievably healthy. I don't think either have missed a single freaking game in their entire careers. And they both been playing like the same Jimmy Butler minutes through three coaches. And usually it's a 4-man rotation, so it omits the difference between Jeff Teague and Tyus Jones. And, you know, Taj Gibson's been freakishly healthy this year. It also kind of omits just how good the Wolves training staff is. And I will, like, I'll say this, they're the best in the world. Yes, that includes the Phoenix Suns. They have a better training staff than the Phoenix Suns. Tibbs doesn't listen to them as much as the Phoenix Suns. Coaches listen to those guys, but they're that good. So it's not a BS narrative that he plays them too much, but it's overblown. Just other coaches don't get shit for it. That's kind of where I'm at with it. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense to me, and I've got a similar view. But from that, from what you're sort of saying there, it sort of sounds like you're completely comfortable with the trade itself.
Oh, absolutely. The idea of I know some people that said, like, and before the injury were saying the Wolves lost the trade. I'm like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life, but okay, that's great. Then after the injury, they're like, they basically were gloating about it. And yeah, I blocked about 50 people on Twitter because of that. That was fun. It's crap. Like, they still won the trade. Like, not won the trade. It just turned out to be really good for the Bulls, too. It looked like really lopsided at the time, and that's great that it turned out. And that's the only good way to actually, you know, evaluate trades is what people thought of the trade at the time, because you're just being a revisionist asshole if you don't do it that way. But yeah, like, it's fine. It worked out really well. The Wolves would, like, this is a 14-year playoff. They missed the playoffs for like 14 years. They, like, basketball will die here pretty soon if we don't get back to the playoffs. This is really important. I've tried to, like, wave my arm. There's a lot of hardcore Wolves fans that don't seem to get that. They're like, well, I've waited this long, might as well. I'm like, no, you just won't have a team at a certain point, you dumbass. Like, we literally lost the Lakers. Are you that dense? You asshole. That's kind of where I'm at with it. Like, it's fine. I just want good basketball here. You know, and especially this summer with a tight tight free agency market, being good is going to be a really massive advantage to getting good free agents to sign with you, because all of them are going to sign for 1 year, because all the good ones are going to sign for 1 year deals way under market, so they can get the new cap space underneath that, like, the next year. So it's a really freaking big deal that they play well this year. And yeah, it's I agree, Tibbs has a minutes problem. A lot of coaches, the thing is, a lot of coaches have minutes problems.
Yeah.
Tibbs happened to have that happen to Derek. Like, it's the Derek Rose injury that really stuck with him forever. And Noah getting, you know, and then Noah getting banged up. And then Luol Deng, he did, I will say, the one legit criticism is Luol Deng getting played into the ground like he played him. That's kind of legit. Although he had injury histories, he had an injury history before that, though. But that said, he still just played him into the ground, just more minutes than anyone else. And then the optics were just awful, because then he got meningitis and almost died. It just, like, it was the worst PR. It was like PR disaster with that.
The Bulls did not handle that well at all.
That's kind of what it became with him. No, does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. So let's talk about Tibbs, because I've got a lot of takes about Tibbs that I want to get off my chest. And I do feel like at times I am on an island being a Bulls fan that still somewhat supports Tibbs, and I guess pushes back on some of the issues that are raised in terms of how he coaches his team. He undoubtedly has some issues in terms of the way he runs his starters, the way the units that he runs. The fact that he will have sort of 4 or 5 man rotations, which he doesn't really blend well. He sort of do hockey sort of lineups. There's definitely critiques of Tibbs.
Bigs is a weird thing that he doesn't figure out very well to shoot more threes. Like, it's all that's legit. That's totally legit.
All of those things are legit, but it still annoys me that there's people just sort of go towards this minute per game stat and just cite that as the reason why someone gets injured. Like, that's what happened yesterday on Twitter when Jimmy Butler got hurt. The fact that he leads the league in minutes per game at 37.3 minutes per game. He plays this amount of minutes. Wiggins is 12th in minutes per game. Towns is 15th. He runs his starters into the ground, etc., etc. That's the narrative.
By the way, Towns in the league, it's literally never been hurt. But exactly. Okay, like never have been hurt.
But it's just something that bothers
me. Towns and Wiggins are playing less minutes this year than they did and I believe even the year before that, than they did under Flip and Sam Mitchell. So there's that. Like, if you want to talk about insane minutes, Flip Saunders played Andrew Wiggins like 40 minutes a night, and I'm not exaggerating that. Like, it's not just a Tibbs thing. Lots of coaches do this. I'm not saying, and it's not good, but not everyone's also not everyone's the Spurs to get everyone to buy in like that and to get perfect pieces like that.
Yeah, and to sort of back up your point here, so Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, they average more minutes than Karl Towns. On the perimeter, yep. You've got like Paul George, you've got Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Damian Lillard, Bradley Beal. These guys are averaging either more minutes or pretty much at the same amount that Andrew Wiggins is. Even yep. guys like Ben Simmons and Trevor Ariza are only 1 minute less or averaging 1 minute less than Andrew yeah. Wiggins. So I guess my question or my issue is, why is it never mentioned that these guys are playing a ton of minutes? But when it comes to Karl Towns or Andrew Wiggins or Jimmy Butler, why is it a problem there? Is it just simply the stigma that Thibodeau carries, or is there something more that I'm missing here?
Yes, it is. And here's the thing about Thibodeau's minutes that is really unfair is that Derrick Rose's knee injury happened during the shortened NBA season, where everyone was playing insane minutes that will never be paralleled again unless there's a labor dispute like that. That's the real kick in the ass. That if you want the reason why Derrick Rose hurt his knee that year, it's because literally they were playing back-to-back-to-back games often. That's the real issue to me. And what's insane about this is like people are criticizing Jimmy Butler after he literally took a week off. Not to say that would solve everything with his knees, but also like as if Jimmy Butler's going to go to another team, any other team, and just be like, yeah, I'm going to take it easy this time. Like, no, he's not going to do that. That's Jimmy Butler. That's just who he is.
Yeah, look, I think you're exactly right. And it just bothers me because it becomes this thing about the pitchforks come out for Thibodeau. Butler's averaging 37.3 minutes per game, but people completely ignore that LeBron James and Giannis are right behind there at 37
right.
minutes
I
per
mean,
game.
It's crazy that the best players in the league play all those minutes. It's crazy that you have the best... The most talented basketball players play the most minutes in the NBA. Crazy, I say. Seriously, it's just dumb. Like not, which isn't to say that coaches by and large should stagger their minutes better and deal with the rotations better. And Thibodeau is very stubborn about lots of things, and he often does kind of substitute that like with Jimmy Butler kind of filling in the gaps, and so that's probably the reason for like. That's probably a 2 or 2.5 minute a game difference where he's just like, oh, screw it. Just have Jimmy fix that. If that makes sense. Where, he'll throw out a rotation with Jimmy playing with the reserves or something like that just to shore up how bad they are on defense. Something like that. And, yeah, that's probably a 2 minute game difference. I just tend to think that when injuries happen – people really want a finger point, and that's just kind of how it is. The fact that more people don't make a bigger issue of Derrick Rose going down and tie that to the shortened NBA season and the lockout and just back-to-back-to-back game, which is absolutely insane, which, by the way, took Ricky Rubio's ACL too. I'm surprised it didn't take more players' ACLs. That's just stupid to do. It just kind of speaks to more. I think a lot of people are really more comfortable, personifying a problem rather than just saying it's a systemic problem that doesn't have a face to it. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I just hate the idea of assigning blame to one factor when in likelihood there's multiple things. It's annoying. Yeah. So, look, I wanted to get that rant off my chest because I was doing it online yesterday.
You're not wrong. I was doing this all day. And I eventually just had to, just go do some work or so, like just something that's not related to basketball to get my mind off it. It was awful because people are just insufferable about this. It's awful.
It is, and I agree with you. And I'm sure I'll catch heat from Bulls fans out there from ranting or supporting about supporting.
Send them this way if I have blocked them. Yes, yeah, I'll do that.
I'll send them your way then. Look, I just wanted to get that rant off my chest. But it's going to be an interesting, I guess, period here for the Wolves moving forward. And I guess I wanted to end this conversation with you on a little bit of a high and talk about another former Bull who I guess gets lost in the rotation somewhat in terms of just the general talk in the NBA. And I'm talking about Taj Gibson.
Yes! Literally probably the fourth best free agent acquisition for the Timberwolves in the history of the organization. And that is not hyperbole in any way.
Yeah.
Which cuts both ways, by the way, because just how hapless this franchise has been. And also just how freaking good he's been. He's been so good this year. Literally the most consistent player on the team. Just blown away by how good he is. Lots of people were trying to talk, because in the preseason he was taking all these corner threes and stuff. If he adjusts to that, then the signing will be good. Turns out he's just turned it into normal Taj Gibson again. And he's just been absolutely worth every penny of the signing because he's just that damn good. And he's just one of my favorite people in the NBA and one of my favorite players to watch. I just love the dude. I love to watch that guy.
Well, I mean, that's great to hear because Taj, I said this on my podcast last week, Taj Gibson is probably top three for me in terms of my favorite Bulls of all time. And
I love that guy.
He's awesome. And that was going to be my question is, has the Minnesota fan base embraced him in the same way that the Bulls fans did? And it sounds like that's a resounding yes.
I mean, I have, and I'll fight them until they haven't. I'll take that. I'll take on that burden. He's been awesome. The reason why he has number 67, he was PS 67 at his. He's from New York, right?
Yeah.
He went to PS 67 in grade school, and he was there. He's just like, hey guys, what should my number be this year? Kids all shout out 67. He's like, well, okay, that's my number. That just kind of speaks to just how just normal that, he's just a very down-to-earth, normal guy. And he's very low-key in everything that he does. And he's just awesome. And it's how his game is, but it's really hard to ignore. He really, I can't imagine a better locker room guy either than him. He's just absolutely fantastic to see. He's What was it? I think, do you follow Matt Femrite? He's a...
I don't think I do.
He mostly does analytics stuff, which was funny because his analytics take on Taj Gibson was like, yeah, Taj Gibson just does shit.
He really does.
I'm like, yeah, that's actually exactly what he does. It's amazing. It's this weird aggregate of awesomeness that just shows up and he's just... awesome to see play basketball. He's been an absolute joy to watch. Super consistent. I was very worried about him because he took a dip under Hoiberg and then another even deeper dip under when he was in OKC. But now he's back with Tibbs and he's just crashing boards and playing awesome. And it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it was. And it was great to see him today. 19 points, 10 rebounds, 4 offensive boards. I had just a classic Taj Gibson game against the Bulls, and it was fun to see. But I wanted to ask you that question, like I said, because he's one of my favorite Bulls. But
oh my God, I can see why he's a favorite. Oh my God, and all these Bulls fans when they sign him, just like be good to him, be good to him, dude. No matter what, be good to this guy. Because they were all worried that the OKC stuff was just who he was at this point, and they just missed him when he was playing for Tibbs and everything. And I get it. I totally get the affection towards him now. He's amazing.
He is. And look, he's a great boy. He's proving to be a great Wolf at the moment as well. But look, I appreciate you jumping on and talking this game and just talking Butler and Tibbs in general. It was good for me. It was therapeutic for me to get those rants off. Yeah. Hopefully it was therapeutic for you as well. But I'm sure it's a good future up ahead here for the Wolves. And hopefully with Jimmy Butler returning, maybe this season... hopefully he can get back and that knee is okay for a playoff push if he does elect to take the option there of not necessarily repairing it, but snipping the meniscus. So hopefully if he does return, it's all good.
You can't have a torn meniscus if you don't have a meniscus. You got to think about that.
That is true. That is true. But tell everyone where they can follow you online and your podcast as well.
Patrick _Fenlon, FENELON. Our podcast is The Land of 10,000 Takes with me and Maggie Schultz. Where we talk about NBA nonsense. I was going to edit that this week, and then until this win today, I was just too discouraged to even edit that and put that out.
We'll have a new episode out tomorrow, on that, which will be Sunday. So yeah, thank you very much for letting me do that. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for coming on, and I definitely suggest listening into The Land of the 10,000 Takes. I was going to say it was a Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, but every time I've listened to it, it's just been like a general NBA show as well. But
it's also just general bullshit. Like this, there were no NBA news this week where we just talk about like I'll give a preview on this week where like we talked about the Dallas Mavericks sexual harassment suit. And we talked about guns in the NBA, and Maggie and I were both half in the bag, and there was this guy from Ireland next to us at the bar, and we literally just interviewed him for the rest of it. And then the recorder died. And so, yeah, it's going to be a bitch to edit, but it could be a good podcast if I remember it right. It also might be terrible. So anyways, but listen anyways, or just click on it. That's all I care about, actually.
Yeah, you've definitely plugged it well there. But I appreciate you coming on. We'll do it again sometime.
Take care, man.
So thank you to Patrick there for jumping onto the show today. And I appreciate you guys listening into this episode today. So unfortunately, some bad news with Jimmy Butler. And like I said, I'm sure there are a lot of Bulls fans out there that didn't want to see Butler go down with that injury. So hopefully you enjoyed this podcast from a Bulls perspective, but also from a Minnesota Timberwolves viewpoint as well. So hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. We'll be back again next week to wrap up next week's lot of games, as well as all the other news surrounding the Chicago Bulls moving forward. I'll catch you then.